Welcome to episode 2 of the Eyes Free Sports Podcast. This is your host, Greg Lindberg, and on this episode, it's a pleasure to be joined by a guest. His name is Andrew Leibs. Andrew is a writer and a blind athlete himself from New Hampshire. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, definitely want to talk about Andrew's book, which is called Encyclopedia of Sports and Recreation for People with Visual Impairments. And let's see, before we get into that, Andrew, if you could just give me a little background on yourself, just a little bio about what you do, where you're from, and all that good stuff.
I was born in Syracuse. I grew up in upstate New York, went to college in New York City and the University of New Hampshire, and I've been a writer and a journalist for many decades now. I've written for publications like the Manchester Union Leader and the Boston Globe, and also for About.com. And this current book, or this my most recent book, is this one, which I wrote about 5 or 6 years ago on blind sports. And I tend to write mostly about disability topics. Like, my first book was about blind literacy, and I've also written about how disabled people do in medical school and that kind of stuff. And but I think blind sports is one of my top interests.
And I'm curious, what is your actual visual impairment?
My actual visual impairment is 2200. I was born that way due to ocular albinism.
Gotcha. And can you kind of just explain, like, what exactly you can see, basically?
Basically, it's a very strange kind of a thing where you have very good walking around vision, but fine detail. Specifically, let's say, you know, words on a sign, if you're not close enough to it, you won't be able to pick up those as well as somebody with 20/20 vision. But I'd say enough vision to be able to hit a baseball, but maybe not enough to be very comfortable in center field lining up a catch.
Gotcha. I see. Okay, and then as far as your book, The Encyclopedia of Sports and Recreation, talk to me about what inspired you to write that and how you got that idea.
In 2004, when I met a very great woman by the name of Lauren Lieberman, who's a professor at the State University of New York at Brockport, and she's a founder of Camp Abilities, which is a camp for blind children, and she's one of the pioneers in terms of research and measurement of activity among blind and visually impaired people, in terms of, you know, testing, in terms of finding ways for them to participate in sports. And what really moved me, though, was just to see the amount of sports and recreation had exploded so much over the previous decade that it was really even outpacing, I think, what advocates knew about what was going on. I mean, it was like, I think things like after the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed in 1990, and then when the Paralympics began to gain parity with the Olympics, and then things like the Wounded Warrior Sports Project began, it was just such an explosion in terms of accessible programs, accessible recreation, and also just organized team sports that it just seemed like it was right for right time to put that together, because there are just so many that blind people participated.
Very interesting, yeah. And then talk to me about how you actually approached this book project and how you decided, you know, who to interview, which sports to include, and all that stuff.
Well, for the book, I interviewed about 120 people. Lauren Lieberman wrote the foreword for the book, and Mark Lucas, who was the executive director of the USABA, the United States Association of Blind Athletes, he wrote the afterword. And I knew a lot of blind athletes from my participation in programs such as Ski for Light, which is cross-country skiing for the visually impaired, blind and visually impaired, and also blind running. And I knew people who played beat baseball. So I had quite a few people that I already knew and had come in contact with. That gave me a good core to begin with. And then just basically through word of mouth, I was able to find a lot of very good stories of people who do sports at all different levels. I mean, we're talking about some elite athletes like Eric Weinmeier and Marla Runyon, down to just people who are just average Joes who just want to go out and just move a little bit sometime during the weekend. That was kind of the part that really got me. I think it was just the part I liked most about the book was just talking to people, getting their stories, seeing how they approached various things, seeing what they overcame. Because it's interesting, it's just a lot of little things, a lot of sometimes it's just simple logistical hurdles, and then sometimes it's just having a program near you, and it's just having a desire to get out there and try something, It's just people come at it from all different levels of expertise and enthusiasm, and it's just really beautiful to see how to see the effect that it has on people's lives.
Yeah, as a beat baseball player myself, it's just some of the people I've gotten to meet, and like you said, just seeing them in action, seeing them playing, you know, a
right.
sport, and just how that really can change and transform someone's life. It's pretty incredible.
Yes, that's right. And in fact, in regard to beat baseball, one of my friends whom I wrote about in the book is named Kay Ann Rausch, and she was a member of the Boston Renegades beat baseball team. And she told me that when she was in school, not only was she the last person picked for every sport, but the teams would argue over who had to take her. So she kind of liked them, so that was very bad for her team. And she didn't think she had much of a chance being an athlete, but then when she became an adult and she learned about beat baseball and began doing it, she found that she had this great ability to really whack the ball pretty well and has been a very good player. So it's those kinds of things. Like, a lot of times people who are blind, they may grow up and they may not even realize until they try something that they have all this competitive energy in them that they never knew was there.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. So let's just go through a few sports here, you know, for the visually impaired and blind, and
sure.
Just kind of talk about them in general terms. So I know you did mention
okay.
beat baseball. Just explain
right.
For those who've never heard of beat baseball, or maybe you're kind of confused about how it works, how the actual game works.
Sure. Well, it's a baseball game in which you have pitcher, who's the only person who is not blind, and working with the batters to try to hit the ball. And they there are two bases, like there's a first base and a third base that have that are sort of large foam bases. They have buzzers inside, and when you hit the ball, one or the other one of those things buzzes, and you must make it to that base before somebody in the field is able to field the ball. And it's just so we never know what it's going to be. But for the most part, it's very similar in terms of fielding, the feeling of the game, the spirit of the game. And it's just it's a little different for people who are visually impaired, who have to be blindfolded. But it really is a sport that gives you most of what you would get playing baseball in terms of competitiveness and camaraderie and just the fun of the competing.
And I should mention the NBBA, the National Beat Baseball Association, is basically
yes.
the primary, you know, governing body of beat baseball, at least in the
right.
United States, and certainly probably the most well-known in the world.
Probably the most famous significant team sport right now for blind people is goalball, which is something really pushed by the USABA. It's like a team sport. It's a Paralympic sport. And it basically is a three-person team, and you harvest, it's sort of like you're trying to roll the ball past the other team, imagine you're on like a gym floor and you're trying to roll the ball past and into the opponent's goal. And there's a lot of strategy involved, a lot of diving and a lot of hitting the deck, and a lot of different techniques in how you throw the ball. But it's becoming a real mainstay in terms of probably the most marquee team sport for blind people in terms of how it's governed, in terms of how popular it is, in terms of that kind of stuff. And also tandem biking is also huge. And I think some of the other another one of the major sports is Nordic skiing and alpine skiing are also very well established as things that blind people compete in regularly. And that's it's one of those sports I love to talk about because it's just people always think it sounds so absurd, a blind person skiing. I mean, you can run right into a tree, that kind of stuff.
Right.
They have no idea how a blind person can be flying down a mountain skiing. And there are various techniques that they use for people. So it's something that works out very well. Like, for example, you might have, once a person has mastered the turning and the feeling of what it's like in their muscles, you know, to be on skis and to go into the turns, they'll have a guide skiing nearby, and they might just call out numbers like 1, 2, and 3 for how far you are off the center of the trail, basically, and it'll kind of enable you to correct. And sometimes when you're learning, you might have two people skiing in front of you with a pole between them that you can either hang on to or put your hands above, and that will sort of teach you how to give you the spatial awareness of what a turn is like. So all kinds of things that people really don't ever consider that blind people can do that happen. In fact, they even have the biathlon, the winter sport, the cross-country skiing plus shooting for blind people, which always seems to freak people out. But it's they do it with guns that are laser that shoot little light beams at these targets, and that you sight in on acoustically by putting on headphones and listening for the pitch changes in these various beeps to know when you're locked in. And it's just so it really gives people who are blind a great almost everything you get when you're a fighter biathlete, but it's been able to compete. That's one of the ones I love because it always seems to blow people away to know that you can do that blind people can do almost any sport.
Yeah, that really is incredible to think about. Just the fairly basic adaptations that can be made to some of these sports, and how it really opens the door to so much opportunity for a blind athlete.
I think a lot of people don't realize. I think they fear the idea of blindness. They fear the idea of losing their vision. So they always think, oh my God, if I were blind, I couldn't do that, and a blind person shouldn't do that. Like something like archery, for example. But what you learn when you talk to blind athletes is something like archery, a good deal of that sport is all about stance and stamina and muscle memory. For example, they have a guide who will sort of point them at the target initially, and the guide can give like basic corrective comments, but it's the blind person's job to fire those arrows. And when you have to fire 36 arrows in over three rounds in a tournament, I mean, it's really, as one archer told me, it's fighting the target's really the least of it. It's being able to just stand in there and have the strength and the stamina and the wherewithal to keep doing that. And it's just, people don't realize how much of it, how much of what goes on in sports is the body and not the eyes.
Yeah, that is so true when you really break it down. And I know, kind of on that note, I have had a chance to play audio darts, which I do really enjoy.
Yes.
It's such a cool game. It could be dangerous if, someone's standing too close to the board or whatnot, but definitely another cool game.
I cover that in the book, and I talk about a person named Sue Lichtenfeld from Pennsylvania, and she's a big darts advocate she plays, and it's something that's really, she thinks is really great for blind kids because it's a fun game, and it teaches a lot of things. It teaches spatial awareness. It teaches them how to listen good and listen well and find things, because you got to find darts that fall on the floor. It teaches math skills, and then things, and on the adult level, things like audio darts. What I found was people who are fully sighted, they love the audio dartboard. It's cool to have a device that will give you all the information like that. It's another one of those examples where adaptations made for the disabled become very popular among the general public.
Exactly, yeah. And then as far as water sports go, talk to me about some of the water sports out there for the blind.
Well, competitive swimming is huge, and I also do a chapter in the book about surfing, talking to some blind surfers whom I know pretty well, and that's big. Interesting to encounter things like surfing because, it is visual, but for the most part, it's more your bodily feel of the wave, how, and how you know exactly when to begin to stand up on it, and other sports, too. Water skiing is also big. There are, it's funny, there's really great equipment that makes it easy to do, even slalom water skiing, that basically run on, that basically use a certain kinds of bells and buzzers, and, so kayaking is big. Kayaking and canoeing are very big. Tandem kayaking, obviously, and are big. And fishing is also another one that's a very popular sport among blind people. Because let's face it, even if you have 20/20 vision, most of the time you're not going to see that fish anyway. So it's like so basically it's a very non-visual sport for the most part.
True. Yeah. Good point. And then as far as tandem biking, I know that's also a pretty big sport. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. I was lucky enough to be able to do a week-long camp with the U.S. Blind Cycling Team back in the 1990s in Colorado Springs at the Olympic Training Center. It was a lot of fun. It was just beginning to become big then, and it's become very well established now. It's obviously with the pilot, it's one of those sports that blind people can jump in on and more or less an equal level, because it's something that is very popular for people who really like to compete. And it's also another one of the ones that's also very social. I mean, there's the Blind Stokers Club in San Diego that they do a lot of fun things with, and they're really sort of getting the word out about the nice community aspect of this. And so there's a lot of growing list of opportunities out there for people. The USABA, they do a lot of developmental camps throughout the year. They do ski programs, and they have rowing camps, and they have goalball camps and other things. So I think that that's definitely a place to look, because a lot of times these things are not very expensive. If you're blind, you can get, I think you can get reduced prices in some cases, stipends and whatnot. So there are those opportunities. A lot of sports that people wouldn't think about when they think of the blind, like fencing, for example, that's kind of in the archery area. But people think, oh my God, fencing, a blind person, you got to give a blind person a sword? Yes, I mean, apparently, when you, I don't use a cane, but I'm told that much of what constitutes really good cane technique is also very applicable to fencing. So when you are a blind person, you begin to learn fencing, you begin to have this automatic way of sort of enhancing or extending your sense of spatial awareness. You're sort of like reaching out into the world. You're defending things coming in, and it really gives you, it kind of widens your world basically, because it just it lets you become more, I don't know, more aggressive and become more competitive, and it's just in a way that just sort of expands what you would normally do and just by walking around.
Right, and that is so interesting about the Kane skills and how that, you know, those techniques can be applied to something that people would never even think about. It's really interesting.
Yes. There are many sports like that. There are a lot of sports where one thing I encountered when writing the book was a lot of people claim their sport to be the only sport that blind people can compete on a completely equal level as the fully sighted, which is, it kind of applies to a lot of things. It seems to come up a lot in things like wrestling and judo, which are pretty similar, and I wrote about those, things like horseback riding comes up too, and curling is pretty similar. So, you know, there's just such a wide variety. I think almost any sport that you could think of that you could want to compete in is probably available. I think I cover about 40 major ones in the book.
Wow. Yeah, and I should mention I did have a chance to read the book a few years ago and was just totally blown away at the pure number of sports and activities, and it really is amazing.
Yes. There are just so many different kinds of programs now, so many different types of the awareness and the expectation of being able to have these kinds of programs is really driving them. And it's just become, and they're very important. A lot of times when you talk to veterans, you learn when people are blinded and they come in and they're wounded in some way. Oftentimes it's getting back into an activity that they enjoyed before they went to war, skiing or, you know, snowboarding. It's getting into that is one of the main ways that they get the feeling of having their life back. And that's one reason I think it's so important that these programs still grow and expand.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I'll say, as a beat baseball player, just being able to step up to that plate by myself with the bat, to be in the field, you know, by myself, obviously with other teammates, but just the independence that a lot of these sports create. You know, a lot of them, there are obviously tandem and whatnot, but it still gives you that feeling of freedom and independence.
That feeling of freedom is that's very important. I was talking, you know, and it's funny because not every activity has to be able to be boiled down or be able to be converted into a team sport equivalent. Sometimes it's just parts of things. Like, for example, with tennis, a man at the in Massachusetts were telling me about teaching it at the Perkins School for the Blind. And what kids loved about learning to play tennis was they would be put into an area on the floor there that was completely open to them. It was just their spot, and they knew they could go running around in there and not have to worry about anything. Just that bit of freedom alone was something that got them very interested in it. And, you know, and they do make adaptations that the ball has BBs in it and you can let it bounce 3 times or whatever. But it's things like that are been very interesting to me. And also in terms of tennis, the other thing he told me was that the kids really loved was this woman began this program called Tennis Serves, which brought sighted kids from area high schools in to sort of work with them and teach them tennis. And they were basically the same age. So blind kids being able to interact with their sighted peers like that, that was just something that was very gratifying for them. It was something that they really took to. So there are aspects of sport that are so important in small ways and in big ways. It could just be somebody getting out there and being able to try something, being able to play something.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's talk a little about the Paralympics. I know there are several blind athletes who compete in the Paralympics, and if you could talk about maybe some of the sports that are in those games.
Judo players, I know some of the cyclists who have competed, and I've interviewed, I think, three of the top female goal ball players. So goal ball's big, tandem biking is big, and swimming, and all the winter sports, except for hockey. I don't think that beat baseball is not yet a Paralympic event, but it's probably going to be at some point. But
right, yeah, I know there's been kind of a push for that. Another sport that comes to mind is golf. I know there is an organization, I think it's the USBGA, the U.S. Blind Golf Association. How familiar are you with golf? And if you could talk a little bit about how that works.
Familiar. Yeah, I cover in the book. I Jerry Pointsnout, or Pointsnout, I forget how to pronounce his name, Pointsnout. He was a blind golfer who won the international championships many years back in the 20s, back in the aughts, back in, I think, 2007 or 2008. And he used to play golf with his dad growing up, and then he got a very rare disease. But when someone told him about blind golf, his first comment was, are you kidding me? I mean, it sounded like a joke to him. He thought it was pulling his leg, but then he found out that it's just, no, it really does. It really does work. And if you're a golfer and you go blind, it's most of the game is still right there for you, because it's the body, it's the positioning, it's your stroke, it's your the eye is important. Obviously, you got to know where you're looking or where you're aiming. But usually, you got to drive that ball and hit that ball. So most of that is still very much the way it was before you lost your sight. So golf is a great popular. I think golf has been pretty well established as something that as a blind sport or a sport that blind people have played for many years. I think Ian Fleming mentions blind golf in blind people playing golf in Goldfinger, if I recall.
Just in the last couple of years, I know I've heard about, for example, football. I know there was a player on the USC Trojans, the college football team,
yes,
who was blind. And I've also heard about even some high school players that have gotten to, maybe play a few plays here and there. And it is pretty neat to see kind of that overlap of how, a totally mainstream sport with, pretty much all sighted athletes can occasionally incorporate a blind athlete as well.
Well, I think in football, if you're a big guy and you're the center, I mean, when you pretty much just have to kind of rear back and block what comes at you, that would be more, that would probably be something a blind person could do fairly easily.
True.
Or at least could do, yes. Yeah.
Right. Alrighty, so as far as your book, if people are interested in checking that out, how can they find your book?
Well, it's available on Amazon.com. My last name is spelled L-E-I-B-S. It's also available on the IAP publishing website. And if someone is blind or visually impaired or is a talking book user, they can also get it on tape from the Talking Book Library.
And we'll definitely include that info in the show notes as well, just so people have that in text.
Great.
All right.
Okay.
Well, I definitely appreciate the overview, Andrew, and would love to have you on the podcast again sometime, and really appreciate
I'd
your
love
time.
It. Great. Thanks very much.